All right, everybody, we're back May 7, 2024. Happy to be back. It's been a couple weeks. Tough show today following a great guest in Rochmel Jones. That was really fun. I mean, I knew he'd be awesome, but like he gave us more than I would have bargained for. Today's guest, going to follow him up nice, I think. And we're getting back to a topic I love, which is high school sports. Much as we talk about all that other junk, I think it's just the purest form if parents could stay out of the way. Absent today, the commissioner of Major League Baseball almost, and the Don Father, not here, but Angry Jay's in the studio. Studio engineer Kevin Ross, hosting yet again at his studio, Lottie Dottie, and myself, Crocker and the Tax Man, are not here. But it's time to bring in and introduce our this episode guest, and perhaps... It's almost hard to describe what he was or is, but maybe the most storied, definitely talked about. You might want to throw in controversial, at least to the week, and meet people out there that aren't suited for sports. But we're bringing in the legendary coach, Jack Cochran. Jack, thanks for coming.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You weren't on our radar, but a former guest, Justice Harrison, said you were halfway decent on the sidelines, but more importantly to the young men and getting them to where they needed to go when they had no idea where they could go. And I was kidding. When your name came up, I'm like, of course. But, your former players, at least the only one we know, couldn't speak more highly of.
Raved about you, Coach.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Justice, great kid.
We're going to bore everybody with some background, but real quick, grew up in New London, probably played three sports as a kid, played four. What was the fourth?
Wrestling.
Oh, of course. A grappler.
I can't imagine that.
Were you a lineman when you got into football?
Tight end.
All right, so part-time lineman.
Back then, it was a glorified lineman back then.
Okay. Yeah.
They weren't throwing the ball much.
Third and plus 17.
And... did you play football in college?
Yeah, Norwich University, small division.
Is that three. Military?
Yeah.
Military College of Vermont, yeah.
Yeah. What made you go there besides football?
Just fucked up a lot in high school.
That'll do it. They teach you the right way, right?
Yeah, it was, just growing pains, and it was a good place at the time.
Did you play the other military universities in the Northeast?
We played the Coast Guard. That was the little Army-Navy game we played.
That's cool.
That's cool, yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a very exciting game.
Is there a Mass Maritime? Did you play that?
We played Mass Maritime, yeah.
And then there's one maybe like closer to Maryland. What might that be? No. Anyway, so what position did you play there?
Tight end.
Okay. Yeah, they throw the ball at all?
We did.
How were the hands? Lester Hayes or Butterfingers?
Dropped one in 8 years.
Let's go. Let's go. What number were you?
81.
I hate when tight ends wear
they changed it.
But even when tight ends were like 37 or something, get out of here. Yeah. Remember the guy for the Raiders that wore... Who was the guy for the Raiders after Casper? That was 87.
Raymond Chester?
No. Oh, no. How could I?
Todd Christensen, 46.
There was a 40-something. Was he a tight end?
Yeah, Todd Christensen was 46. Yeah, he was the NBC guy. Yeah, announcer, too.
He did a good job on NBC.
Caught a million passes,
to some of these bums now.
Him and Charlie Jones was the duo.
They had hair like the Don Father.
I love Witten as a player. Boy, was he a terrible, terrible announcer. Yep. Coach, you watch professional football?
Very rarely. I love college football.
Okay.
I watch it. I built a barn, an old barn. I bought an old farm, and it's got 8 televisions, and I sit there Saturday morning. And
can we do a podcast from there next year?
You would love it, yeah. It's got every NFL, every college helmet in the rafters. It's a
Penn State will be on. That's all we need.
Before we get into the coaching stuff, what did you teach?
I started out history, social studies, economics. Youth and the law, and then switched to PE and health when I became an athletic director.
Sell out.
There you go. Those phys ed guys are the best. Trust me.
Full of wind pants. Remember the wind pants?
We don't wear wind pants. We wear shorts year round.
Coach.
That's what we do.
Your first head coaching job in football had to be something you look forward to, but you're a young man at this time.
Yeah, too young, actually.
How old?
I was, 25.
Wow.
I just finished 2 years at University of New Haven. And I applied, God, for two jobs. I thought Bloomfield was in New Jersey, to be honest with you. I drive up, car breaks down. I walked the last 2 miles. It was in July. And when I finished the interview, the athletic director told me I was the only one to interview. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Gong. You got the job.
Bloomfield was in a rough, you know, time then. And being young, I mean, I just had a lot of energy, a lot of time to put in. And we were fortunate, had some good luck, and made a run.
I've had, you know, the experience of being around Bloomfield sports just because two of my children play at Bristol Central. And, you know, you kind of never know what you're going to get based on the sport. But I can remember, like I said, I follow high school sports. Waterbury Republican, still one of the greatest sports newspapers out there. Ansonia is our, you know, Waterbury's neighbor. They got great coverage. And it always seemed to be Bloomfield, Ansonia. And Ansonia is synonymous with Dynasty, Connecticut football, Pop Shortell. When you think Connecticut football, to me, I don't care about the division either. When you think Connecticut football, I think you're thinking Ansonia.
Well, if you've ever been in their gym, you see all the banners. I mean, the whole wall is just football.
Yeah, and by the way, their dozens school doesn't have fields at it. There's one softball field that's overgrown. The backstop's overgrown. But Coach puts Bloomfield on the map kind of quickly. And you know, could you just talk about, one, what it took to build that program, and two, what it was like, you know, in anticipation of those great, great Ansonia Bloomfield games?
Yeah, definite. Like I said, I was very young, took over a program with a long losing streak. They actually were looking to cancel football. My first year, Jesus. We went 2-8 in 1992. They voted again. And as a compromise, they asked us to form a co-op with Granby to keep the football team going. You know, I looked into the rules. I made sure we were over the number to two co-ops.
So how many kids do you have, like, on your team the first year?
We started with 87. And
you got that many?
We went to week five at Hall with 19. We played a lot of games, and we went to a state championship. We played Seymour in 1993 with 13 players getting off the bus.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Hold on.
Sounds like the
Did parents drive the other players there, or are you telling me?
Honestly, we had more coaches and players on the sideline that year, and we had two get hurt. Two freshmen had to come in, and if we lost one more, we would have had to forfeit.
In a state championship?
In state championship.
Where was that game?
It was at Southern versus Seymour, 1993. All right, we hung tight for a half, and then...
No, Coach. You said from 87 to 19. Can I ask you why? Was it just injuries, or kids just couldn't? They couldn't commit the way that you needed them to commit.
We had to set discipline.
Exactly.
The poor coach before me, he was an insurance salesman in Springfield. He used to get to the school 4:35 o'clock. And, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. The kids would miss 2-3 days of practice, show up and play. And you know, I just had set rules, and we paid our lumps that first year. You know, 2-8, we lost almost the whole team, but it set the stage, you know, going forward. And we went to 8 straight championships after that.
So jackpot for Granby, but continue about like building this.
Yeah. So it,
and how long did Granby last in a co-op?
No, we never co-op. We got to the number of players. It was 25 is the number you have to get to back then, not to co-op. So we ended up staying on our own. And then the second year, we went from 2-8 to 8-2. And we got very lucky. The last game of the year, we had to beat Weaver. We're 8-1, and they're 1-9. And we lose at Weaver. And we're collecting equipment. We're washing the uniforms. And at the same time, Middletown was playing Berlin. Berlin was same situation, 8-1. Middletown's 0-9. And I just say, hey, what the heck, I'll call the current, because back then you couldn't get scores on the internet. And Middletown upset Berlin, and it put us in the championship.
Get out.
Yeah, it was just one of them. And I got to quickly call the kids back.
And then the irony, years later, a certain Berlin coach would steal all your former New Britain players and put the – nah, we won't get into that. But, hey, you got to win, man. So now if you could, like, shift gears to the Ansonia thing. I mean, to me it seems just like storybook. Like
That was 93. We go 8-2. We play Seymour. We lose. 94, we get it going. We play Ansonia. And we got destroyed at West Haven on a Friday night. Next year we make it back again. We go undefeated, and they got a team with Coughlin and 4 or 5 Division I players.
Stevie?
Yeah.
I played. Okay, that's great.
Yeah, and we played a great defensive game. It was 0-0 going into the fourth quarter. They scored, missed the extra point. We score on a trick play. We're lined up for the extra point, and Jack Hunt somehow, God rest his soul, got the flag on the got the flag out, and we got a mysterious call. And, but that really turned the table. Then we went. We lost.
Another legend, by the way.
Yeah, and we lost the next year. Let's see, what was that, Darien? And then we won 4 straight.
So, Coach, you said you took over in 92.
Yeah.
And in 94, you're playing in the state championship?
93.
93. So how the enrollment, like you said, you were struggling to get players. Did they just start, I mean, how did you attract them? Did they just like, wow, like we started winning, yeah. Everybody starts trying out?
It was a very, very small school. I said our biggest enrollment was 500 total.
Yeah.
You know, half of that, 220, 240 boys, 250. And Bloomfield was always known for basketball.
Yeah, they'd have super athletes.
They'd have 100 kids try out. So I was always, I would always wait at the door when they put the cut list up.
Yeah.
And I'd put my arm around those kids. Hey, let's.
That's tough, buddy. Yeah, come on.
Sport. But that got a lot of that. And then when we finally got Northwest Catholic to play us, and you know their team had 25, 30 Bloomfield players, and we played them Thanksgiving. You know, we took it to them pretty good. We got a lot of those players back.
Oh, all right.
Is it safe to say that those players' parents probably were members at Winton, Berry Hills, or some other place like that?
Yeah, yeah. It was a tough, but it's funny. I'd never been in a place like Bloomfield where the athletes, we had a run where we had one team that had 5 future NFL players on it. At Bloomfield.
Can you name him?
Yeah, it was Dwight Freeney.
Who's that?
Andrew Pinnock. Matt Lawrence.
Oh.
Played for the Ravens. That's 3.
I put you on the spot, Coach. We did Wikipedia.
Oh, Dwight Anderson. Played for the Rams.
Huh.
That's 4. And then 5 would be...
And this is Class S football.
Yeah. Who is the 5th that's coming to me? It will come
we'll get it. We'll circle.
Hitting the head a couple times.
We're circling. We're going to get to that, too.
But yeah, we had, and then there was one street in Bloomfield. ESPN should do a special on it. Farmstead Circle. Yeah, it was about 20 houses. And on that street was Dwight Freeney, Nikisha Sales, Brooke Sales. Dwight Anderson that played for the Rams. Maury Garrett played at Princeton. Yeah, it's just an incredible street.
On the same street with 20 houses.
On the same street, yeah. Charles Cameron played at Northeastern.
Did both Sales go to Northwest, though?
No, Nikisha stayed at Bloomfield.
Brooke went to Northwest.
Well, we'll
definitely.
Take Nikisha then. Nikisha, the Villanova kid's out.
She actually worked out with the
He's
football,
now the head
football
basketball
team
coach.
In the weight room. It was great.
Where?
He's at Bloomfield.
Yeah. Is he?
Brooksville, mm-hmm. Yeah. Does a good job. Does a very good job.
Recently, I think within the last year or two, right?
This was
he does
year.
A good job?
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
Coach, I want to just backtrack for a second. You played all these sports growing up, and you obviously played football in college. Did you always know that you wanted to ultimately be a coach, or did someone see something in you at a young age that kind of put you down along that path? Can you talk about a little bit about your influences?
Yeah, I mean, during high school, you know, I was always remember drawing plays in class. Mm-hmm. I was really intrigued by that part of it, you know. And same thing in college, was always looking, drawing new plays and learning, you know, about offense and defense. And then my senior year, I got into law school. And, you know, being at the military academy for 4 years, there was zero social life. So I made that, you know, that one dumb decision, take a year off, put it off. And my old high school coach, Jim Bunicor, he asked me to coach the line. And that was it. Just fell in love with it. Went back to school, got my teaching certificate, mm-hmm. and did 2 years at New London. And then very fortunate, I got a job as a grad assistant at University of New Haven under one of the best, you know, offensive minds, Whipple. Mark Whipple, yeah. You know, and it just, everything went from there.
I forget he was at New Haven.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't they win the national championship?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. The year I went to Bloomfield.
So we could do this Bloomfield thing for a minute. How close are you with those guys? Like, not just the stars, but the old players from Bloomfield. Are you still in contact with them?
Yeah, like I went and played golf with Dwight last week in Florida. You know, excited to go out to Canton in August.
You're going?
Yeah, watch him get enshrined. I'm excited about that.
Once he's a has-been and he doesn't need to get paid for stuff, can we get him here? Where does he live?
He lives in West Palm.
Yeah, we'll call him. Yeah. We have a phone hookup.
Yeah, he's a good guy. And
he must have been fun to block in high school. Jesus.
It was funny. It was he was
couldn't block him in the NFL.
He was actually a soccer player in high school.
Oh.
And we were so small, there was kind of a loophole in the rules back in the 90s where you could switch sports mid-season, after season, as long as you didn't complete the season. So I would, being so small, I had identified the top 5, 6, 7 soccer players and got friendly with them during the year. And the day of their last game, I would tell them, hey, here's the deal. At about 10 seconds left in the game, I just want you to say you quit. So they would say, I quit. And then if you stink in soccer, you're done in October. In football, you go to December. So I used to get those guys.
Oh, my God.
And they're pretty good shape by then.
Oh, my God. And those four of those guys were NFL players, so I got from the soccer team. So
I respect the fact that you waited until 10 seconds to go, too. Where these coaches now are sniping people off of teams, man.
Yeah,
come on.
Can't do that anymore. They switched the rule.
But. Did you know Freeney like right away? You're like, holy crap. I've never seen anything like it.
I got his brother.
I can't believe he played soccer. Like, did anybody else catch that?
He was the best goalie I've ever seen. But think of Bloomfield. We're in the league with Hall,
Glastonbury.
Soccer schools.
Yeah. So we'd lose 14-0, and he'd have 50 saves. So I got him to play football, and first year I had him at linebacker, and he was god-awful. Just couldn't read the sets or the plays. Good tight end, and the next year we put him down at the end. That's all she wrote.
But you go to Syracuse? Where do you go?
Syracuse, yeah. But he still has the combine's fastest first 10 yards. I mean, and that's the history of the combine, yeah.
And he's a lineman.
At 265.
These guys are freaks, man. All right, could talk about Bloomfield for a couple of hours. Next stop, New Britain. What makes you leave building something like that? Just a challenge of better competition?
It was tough. It was I'll make it quick. I know we'll get cut for time, but I worked my way at Bloomfield up from the first 2 years. I didn't have a teaching job. I would substitute 2 days a week at $40 a day. You know, coaching paid, I think it was $1,800. And I finally got two classes. I'm 40%. And then I worked my way to full-time, then athletic director, head of physical education, no classes. And we really turn around athletics. Basketball wins the state championship. We're building the – we bring in golf. We're building, and new principal came in 2000, and it was all wiped away in 2 hours.
Come on, man.
Athletic director. I had to make a choice. Stay as coach or athletic director. Can't do both. Back to a full load, classes. I had a full-time strength coach in the building. His position got taken away, and it was tough. You know, it was just funny. Right when that happened, I got a visit from New Britain, you know, the head of the booster club. And I said, hey, let me at least go interview and hopefully use it as leverage. And it didn't work. it was a great challenge at that point in my career. I'm going from the smallest school in the state that offers football to the biggest. There was 5,000 students at the time. And I just saw the potential. They were still down. They had 7 wins. Was a good season then for New Britain. And
so how many kids come out for football?
Great story. So when I took the job early, and I didn't want to dish Bloomfield, so I did spring football at Bloomfield right after school, and then I ran to New Britain, and we did it at night. So I was doing both. So I was going from 28 kids, and New Britain, I show up. 160 kids.
So I knew you were going to say it was a big number.
And then day 4, we put the pads on. I'm not thinking the school only has 40 helmets and 40 shoulder pads. So we got 40 kids on the field playing, and I got 100 plus sitting on the ground waiting until somebody quits. It was funny. They go in the shed, and whatever size helmet, shoulder pad, you can do that now, but they put it on. They go out. So we do a big fundraiser. We get, you know, 100 more shoulder pads, 100 helmets, and got it going. But it was
wow.
big. I wasn't used to coaching.
So did you cut? I mean, high school.
No, I never, ever would cut. You know, I turned up the heat to make some kids quit, but yeah. I wouldn't cut.
160
make
kids.
Make them cut themselves all day long.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. So then the level of athlete you had there, not quite as many NFL players, but I would think that like the average player in New Britain is a little bit more athletic or
you know, I'll be honest with you, we played Bloomfield my second year at New Britain, and Bloomfield had a much
who approached who about scheduling that game? Yeah, okay.
And they had a much, much better team talent-wise.
Who won?
We beat them.
Yeah.
But they, I mean, they had Matt Lawrence. They had, you know, had the running back for the Vikings from Manchester, Corey Sheets.
Oh, all right.
Played for Purdue NFL, that team. And it was, they were much more talented. Oh, we had Justice Harrison. I mean, he was the only one comparable to anybody they had. You know, we had Keeley's at receiver, but not like Bloomfield had.
That's
Justice.
Great, man. That's our guy,
And three state titles at New Britain.
Yeah.
01, 03, 04?
Yeah, should have been four. We had that season where the state senator from Meriden, I don't know if you remember this, Gaffney, he passed a bill that said it, no one in that part of the CCC had to play us. So we had six teams drop us.
And I remember that. I do remember that.
And we're looking at five games, and it was an 11-game year. And we picked up Zavarian Brothers out of Boston, number one team in Mass. We picked up Holy Trinity out of Long Island, number one team in Long Island. This is funny. You remember the sniper in Baltimore was shooting people at the gas stations? So they canceled high school football in Baltimore. So we picked up four games. They had to come to New Britain.
Jeez.
So we were the only ones watching the news at 6 o'clock, hoping they didn't catch them.
That's a soft schedule, Coach, by the way. Jeez.
Anyhow, they caught them. So we didn't play a game the last, 6 weeks of the season, we didn't play a game. We practiced, so like it was 40-something days against each other. And then we had to play Greenwich, the team with John Sullivan. And we just couldn't get it going in the first quarter. We were just so rusty.
I never heard of that. I don't remember that at all. That's crazy.
Yeah, you know what? Me neither. Yeah.
I do.
How can they go to that level? I mean, come on, man. So to make these other schools' kids feel better, we're going to punish one group of kids? I mean, I just don't see it.
Yeah, and what it led to, they redid the whole CCC by size. It used to be by geography.
They change every 2 years right now,
So. Bristol Central, Eastern, Southington, New Britain.
And that was a great, and it all came down to Mitt. And those schools were beating New Britain.
Yeah, Bristol Central had some great teams.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, New Britain was an up and down program.
Yeah.
Tobucky Jones kind of guy. The team would be good. A lot of kids would play. Then they'd lose it. Coaches would change. Yeah. Never stayed.
Yeah. I got to ask this. So tell us about like your philosophy with as far as team. Like, do you change it a lot? Or like when you have like a Justice Harrison, are you just predominantly a run team? Or did you throw it at all?
Yeah. So,
and I got to ask too. I want to know about the weightlifting.
Yeah. So, you know, my philosophy was always, you know, I coached 2 years in college, and we visited, 20 colleges, and I said, I'm going to run the program like a college football program. So we hung our hat on conditioning and strength.
Yeah.
And that getting the kids to buy into that took some time. But once you get a kid to spend 3 months in the weight room and they see themselves in the mirror,
changes lives. Weight room changes lives.
They're hooked. And then the hardest part was getting the basketball coach on board, because those guys hate weightlifting. Yeah. They're not educated, you know. And once I showed them, hey, this is what Michael Jordan's doing.
Mm-hmm.
He's lifting every day. You get them on board. Then the baseball coaches were always very tough. So, but they had to understand you got to lift all year round. If you take a season off, you lose everything you gained. before that.
So when did you guys lift? Did you lift, like, the football team?
Yeah, we lifted every day. You know, if you didn't play a winter sport, you're in the weight room, played a winter sport, we found a way for you to get your 4 days in.
Okay.
You know, and then same thing in the spring. And then going back to offense, you know, you're very lucky if you get a top-notch high school quarterback that can throw the ball.
Yeah.
And the only way to do it, I feel, is you got to do a winter passing league, legitimate one, a spring passing league, and then a summer passing league. I always felt that quarterback had to play 100 spring games before he suited up week one.
Yeah. Wow.
And see defenses. He's got to throw 2,000 yeah. passes to be a real quarterback. So yeah. to have that kid, you know, and then if, I felt you're always going to have a running back, you know, always going to, and you can always make linemen. You know, but if you had that one great running back, you got to give him 20, 25, 30 touches a game because he's going to break 3 or 4. You know, in high school, if you play great, great team defense and you tackle and you got a kicker and you can play good special teams, you're going to be in every game in the fourth quarter.
So do you run like a 4-3? Did it depend on your personnel
yeah,
and stuff?
Great. I answer this question all the time and people think I'm full of shit. And until Belichick came forward, I feel good now because I never believed in a 4-3 or a 5-2 or a split 4 or an eagle. You know, I thought you just teach the players how to play techniques. So a defensive lineman has to know how to play inside shade, outside shade, head up and slant. You can run 50 different defenses.
Okay.
Linebackers, you can teach them how to read a guard, read a fullback. So we would if we were playing Glastonbury, we were playing a 5-2 shade, cover 3 roll. If we were playing Southington, we're playing a 3-man front and dropping 8, unless because most of their quarterbacks can't get out of their own way and move. Yeah. You know, and we're playing a nickel defense.
Okay.
So it's week to week. And when Belichick came out, I said, oh, man, I guess I was doing it right.
Coach, I want to stay with that just for a second. We had Donovan Klingon down here a couple months ago, and he just talked about how rigorous their practices were for Hurley, especially the day before a game. Now, I'm not comparing basketball to football. Obviously, it's a different sport. But how physical do you guys get in practice to get ready for these games? Are you concerned about injuries, or it's just like our practices are going to be harder than the games?
Yeah, so we tackled every day except the day before the game. And there's ways to do it without killing each other. So we would tackle sleds. I always invested a lot of money in the equipment. We had 3 1-man sleds. We had 2-man sleds, 5-man sleds. We had what are called pop-up sleds. It's very hard to get hurt hitting a sled. And then when we tackled, we always had an A group and a B group. So Dwight Freeney never tackled Andrew Pinnock.
Oh, gotcha. All right.
You know, we always,
yeah.
And we hoped the B guys didn't get killed. And then I would invest in, I always have 20 hand shields. So we let the hand shields take most of the brunt. But we tackled. If you can tackle, one thing I learned from a coach, Deke Pollard, with Syracuse, the defensive coordinator, he told us to go back and look at our film and chart every time there's contact between, say, your linebacker and the running back, your D-back and the safety, and see if he gained yards or lost yards. And if you can hit a defender and stop him at that spot or move him backwards, you're going to save over the course of the year about 3,000 yards. You know, you think if you hit a guy and he falls forward, that's 3 yards. You add those up. Back then, everybody's running the ball, and that made a lot. And that's when it really changed.
That's interesting.
My philosophy in tackling.
Gotcha.
That's cool.
Yeah. I love to hear
and
that
simple.
Kind of stuff.
Like,
yeah.
It makes sense.
Oh, my God. And nobody tackles. You. It kills me. You can't watch the NFL anymore.
No.
Nobody tackles because it's a lot of it's the rules. But kids just aren't tackling. You know, and you got to tackle to the ground.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to do it.
I want to get back to the high school stuff, but
yeah.
This really makes me want to shift gears because it's appropriate right now. Your son, who had a concussion issue, more than that, and kind of stopped his career, right?
Yeah.
Dad, amazing coach. We got a hit.
or we got a tackle.
Yeah.
And then, is that what did it to him, or did it? Were they freak things, or were they?
Yeah, he got a bad concussion in youth football, and not knowing a lot back then, the one that comes after is the one that causes most of the damage. And then he came back at a second one, and then pulled him out for that year, pulled him out for the next year, tried to. I tried to repeat eighth grade with him. I tried to put him at St. Bernard's, and he boycotted it. It was funny. So he missed all of the fall camp, was going to repeat eighth grade. Stood up, say, I'm not doing it. Came back to New London. Missed everything. We were at week one. And
you coached him at New London?
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
And then it was funny. He
you
works,
remember that, Mike?
He was fourth. He works his way up to third. Second string guy. Goes to Atlanta for a funeral. Third play of the game, Jordan Reed breaks his foot. And
remember that name, too.
And Casey's in the game, fourth play of the game.
Jordan Reed, is that what I'm thinking about?
Yeah.
Yep. Coach, that was actually one of my questions. I mean, you've coached hundreds and hundreds of kids. What's it like coaching your son? I mean, that's got to be. I don't know if it's easy or if it's hard. Yeah. I have two daughters. I coach them at lower levels, so I don't have that experience.
It's the best of times and it's the worst of times because you get to be with your kid all day long. And, you know, it's nothing better than winning a game, and especially with your kid playing quarterback, and he's 13 years old. So that was a big part of it. But the tough parts were the drive home after a bad practice, getting in his ass when he screws up on the field. And I'll tell you a funny story. We lost to Ledger's only loss after he took over. And I wouldn't throw the ball. And why didn't we throw the ball? You don't trust me, blah, blah, blah. So the next game, I think I threw 45 straight passes. Kept telling me to stop.
What was the completion percentage?
It wasn't good. But it was funny. Yeah, it was great. I'm glad it was just 1 year. We wouldn't have made 4 years. We would have killed each other.
Won it all that year, though.
We did, yeah. He was. I don't know how he did it. I couldn't have done what he did at that age. The pressure, you know, and he just took it in stride.
So I guess we've naturally moved to New London. Real quick, just to backtrack, why that change? And is it just as simple as my son's there, hometown, go?
Yeah, biggest was hometown. Next great thing, they came and approached me, the superintendent, which doesn't happen much, you know. Came to New Britain.
Great guy.
Yeah. And, you know, my ex-wife wanted to be in New London. That's where her family was from. You know, I always wanted to coach. I had two other chances to go to New London. It just didn't work out. And they were down. So it was a chance to rebuild. And New Britain was tough. It was a tough place to work. You know, a tough place to teach. And it just... We were 43-3 at New Britain and caught a lot of shit when we lost. It was a different atmosphere there. And
it seemed like you like the challenge of building or rebuilding, however you want to look at it.
Yes,
and that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and you don't get a chance to go back to your hometown a lot and then teach. And I thought I was going to retire, you know, in New London and finish my career there. But biggest thing was my son got to go home, his mom getting to go home, and that was the biggest part of it. And all my friends are from New London. They all coach with me. It was, you know, the best 3 years I had coaching because it was all my good friends coaching with me.
So during that time, is that the time of quote unquote the Cochrane rule, or was that when you were at New Britain?
No, it was New London, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So 90 to nothing. Let's just quickly talk about that.
It happened a lot, but I mean when you're like in top physical conditioning, you know, and people always thought we ran scores up. We scored probably the most points in the nation the end of the second quarter. We would score because the other teams couldn't breathe. And we ran a fast-paced offense where, by mistake, I used to go to the National Coaches Convention every year. And by mistake, I went to the National Strength Conditioning 1 year. I just booked the wrong flight. It was a week before. But it was the best thing I ever did because I learned everything about strength and condition I didn't know. And the biggest thing I learned was there's about 60, 68 seconds between a play in high school. You know, the way they do the clock.
Just shave it in half?
And we tried to shave it to 18 seconds.
Oh, my God.
With Chip Kelly.
With a huddle.
And we would, you could see it, the lactic acid would kick in. They couldn't get in the stance. Kids couldn't breathe. And that's when we scored. And we'd practice that every single day.
That was my question. You hammered it home every day.
When the play ended, I had a coach with a whistle on the stopwatch. So we had to be back in the huddle. In 7 seconds, I had to have the play to the quarterback.
So the wide receivers had some moving to do, huh?
We set the huddle 4 yards from the ball, and the receivers, we'd get in the formation in the huddle. The receivers would break out first, and then from there to the, and we never had a snap count in my history of coaching. We just snapped the ball on the first sound. Never a snap count. And we just went. They knew it. We knew it. But you would see, you know, after one quarter, they just couldn't. And it wasn't like we were that much better. We were in better shape. But I mean,
they couldn't stand up.
Yeah. And then we never took the starters out on defense. So that had a lot to do with it. We had a lot of turnovers on defense. And I didn't believe in substituting on defense. I mean, I would spot sub a couple kids. Mm-hmm. Offensively, we'd take the starters out. But
what was the rationale with the defensive philosophy? Just curious.
I wanted shutouts. You know, my dream season, I would retire if I went, you know, 12 games and not give up a point. That was my dreams. And we came close a couple times, but never.
On the offensive end, was the play structure really short to, like, because that could take 10 seconds sometimes for people to spit out the play.
I played in college, and honest to God, it was like I was taking Latin and physics, you know, 262, green, zebra, Y, X. So this was my play, right, sweep, right. You know, I could put a chimpanzee in the backfield and run right, sweep, right. Nobody could. They still screwed it up.
Like
and
that?
And they never had to think of a snap count. And that's
huge.
How many times do high school teams go offsides, get behind the sticks? You never make it up.
How about NFL and college? They go up there and these guys practice that often and they're still jumping off? I don't want to hear about the noise.
And I just did it and we'd.
So what made you come up with that just from going to the
I learned the thing about the conditioning and lactic acid, and that's when I came up with the no huddle, but in a huddle. It was just a fast pace, and it just worked.
So literally the quarterback is saying sweep right
sweep left. Right. Left sweep. I would call the formation. So say I said twins right. They would line up in twins right in the huddle.
Okay.
So they wouldn't have to. You would see linemen do this and run in. So everything was like boom.
Okay.
And sometimes they heard our.
So it's pretty simple.
It was very simple. You know, you couldn't.
But you can't miss it. Like, if you miss it.
My thing was we only ran three tops, was four running plays a game. Two pass protections.
Hold on. Total plays?
Total, like, plays.
Just keep drilling.
And
you threw it that much?
No, we only ran three or four running plays. We'd run 87 formations and motions and shifts just
for
salad dress, but it was the same type. A blast, a counter, a sweep, and an option. And just get greater. How many high school teams you see? They got 50 plays, and a course of a game in high school, if you hit 60, now it's more, but back then it was 52, 55 plays. If you got 20 plays, you don't run half of them in a game.
Yeah.
You know, especially ones working.
Yeah, you got to go back to it.
Yeah, and if you get great.
Why change it?
Yeah, if you can get great at a couple of plays.
So
Lombardi's Packers right there. That's
sweet. They know it's coming. And
guys,
stop it. Yeah.
We love high school basketball. You know, I have to make this analogy with what Coach did. Like, if you get your guys to play a certain way, and I'm not saying that we've ever had teams that could be as conditioned and be well-oiled like his, but especially the number of athletes. But there's a point when you can't help but be better than the other team if you're better than them already and they get tired.
Yep.
And even in baseball, it's almost an embarrassment for parents on both sides when you stop running on pass balls and all that stuff. Oh, so we're not running on pass balls? Do they do that in the big leagues? No, ball goes to the backstop, the guy goes up a base, right? So, like, you shouldn't be punished for being that much better. You don't have to, like, taunt and all that bull crap, but, like, if you just play and you got your third stringers in there who deserve to play like the first stringers.
That's a question for you. So, like, you're hammering somebody's teams. How do you with the kids? Like, how do you? You know, because you know, high school kids, man, they want to.
You think about it, if you're running a real program, you're working out 360 days a year, and now you're telling a kid. And we went some seasons where our starters didn't play in the second half for eight games.
Yeah,
and I mean, this is their best time in their life, and I was,
can't play them.
Can't play them, and it was my son. I mean, he was the one. I say it's the story of Oedipus Rex. My son took the brunt of my rule because his 4 years of high school, he played in the second half maybe five times.
Yeah, his numbers would have been crazy if he was playing the whole game, right?
It was my fault.
And it was your fault.
Well, you know, I work in Plainville schools, and, you know, we've had those ups and down football programs, and I remember the coach saying that playing against a team and with these rules in effect was worse because they would run to the one-yard line, kneel four times, and then give you the ball back, and then you'd take the ball from the one-yard line every single time, get sacked and safetied half the time. They'd rather just score and just play, and then
bring
in the lower players, hopefully come in and, you know, like, you know, your son not playing as well. But, you know, it was more demoralizing to watch the kid just stop running.
And it's
take a knee.
It could have been prevented so easily. And I wrote up, you know, so many proposals. All the CIAC had to do was schedule correctly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I never should have been playing Turtelot and Griswold. You know, when I first went to the ECC,
that's 90-0, right, Griswold?
Yeah, 90 something. But when I first went to the ECC in New London, I stood up and said, "Let us play in the large division, and we'll take Woodstock spot." Their first year, let them, and they did. So we played Fitch, and we played NFA, and then the next year they dropped
East
us.
Lime.
They dropped us down, and that's when this. And Connecticut's so small. Now they're doing alliances. They're not doing it right, but at least they're trying. You could schedule 10 great games in Connecticut, mm-hmm. and the longest drive is going to be 2 hours.
Yeah.
We just don't do it.
Yeah, I teach in Southington. They're always going down to Darien and Greenwich to pick up the big-time game. And
smart.
Like you said, yeah, I mean, they have to do it. I want to ask you something, Cole. Obviously, your high school resume speaks for itself. I got to think, like, a college came calling at some point, or did you have any little desire to leave the high school ranks to go to the college ranks?
I can't wait. I've always wanted to ask you this question without knowing you.
Yeah.
Like, Pasqualoni and and you're probably friends with him, but that was not good. And, like, how could it have not happened where you're on the big campus at Storrs?
Well, I had a shot early on when Jimmy Johnson was at Miami. There was the defensive coordinator, Campbell, was from New London Groton. So I had an opportunity then. It just didn't work out. And then the second chance I had was with the Colts when Casey was at UConn. And it just, I would have missed everyone because it was a scouting job, not a coaching job. Could have led into it. But
Coach, I'm not talking NFL. I mean, that's the ultimate goal for all athletes, get to the professional level. As it turns out, maybe it's not the best level. These UConn basketball players aren't exactly thrilled with the way the game's played at that level. But, you know, college, you know, how could you have not been at Storrs or another place?
A lot of it was just, you know, the once the stuff with the media and the points, it was like a fire. Mm-hmm. You know, they couldn't control. It was just.
Yeah, but I think they would want that because, like, at least you got to live up to it. Now, I mean, like, look at what they've done. I don't want to put your son in a tough spot because you know your son played there, but, like, geez, like, it's almost like we shouldn't even have it. Like, what's the point to lose money? I mean, we got to have a better product
You got to look at the root of for UConn to be successful. And when they went to the BCS game,
that was crazy.
We were putting out 15, 20 Division I players a year out of the state. I went to University of Florida spring game. There were five Connecticut players playing in the spring game.
Come on, man.
Yep. Jordan Reed, Aaron Hernandez, Graham Stewart from Middletown, Tommy Jordan from Ridgefield, and Tyler Murphy from Wethersfield. And I'm sitting there, wow, if they just kept three of these guys. But that's how many, and they were still getting Orlovsky. And, I mean, we could give UConn 10, 12 players. Now, we're lucky if we have three Division I players coming. That's how far Connecticut football has come down. And it's not coachy. Coach Moore is probably one of the best coaches in the country.
He's awesome.
Look what he did, you know, 2 years ago with that team. Mm-hmm. And he just doesn't have a base. I mean, if you can't get 10 kids from Connecticut, he needs, what, 20 a year, 25 a year?
Is there anything that can make it happen?
Money, NIL money, winning. But right now, we're the only independent football team left in the country.
Right.
So we got to go play tennis.
What am I missing about Notre Dame?
They did an alliance.
It's like half and half, I think, with Notre Dame. They can go out and make their own schedule.
How do they get away with this and whatever they do, man? I'm sick of it.
But UConn has to go play now. Clemson and get their heads bashed in and lose 15 kids and just forget to make a few bucks.
I think that's what people forget when Edsel was there and they were really successful. They were in the Big East, first of all. They were in a legitimate conference. And he got all that pipeline from Florida. However that came about, to your point, he wasn't getting the Connecticut kids, he was getting those Florida kids on top of a few Connecticut kids.
And he found a lot of three-star, two-star.
Right.
And he was great at developing athletes. You know, where he missed it, he refused to use the transfer portal, and it killed him.
Coach, they did have really good players for a while. And I remember they beat South Florida in the rain. We did a bus trip from the street that night, and there was 40-year-old adults running on a field, bro. But, like, Jay, remember we went to a game, and they had a linebacker who played for a minute for the Redskins and maybe the Packers. So that name is Fincher.
Yeah,
you remember his name?
Yeah, he was Albert Fincher.
He was
nasty.
A freaking monster.
He was.
And then in the NFL, he's the third string outside linebacker or whatever. I mean, the talent must be amazing. And, you know, I'm sure Dwight Freeney could tell us some good stories. But, like, even Justice, you know, like, you know, he's in offensive meetings with Tom Brady and Eli Manning. I mean, whatever you could say about Justice's career and how it ended up or whatever, he's in meetings with those guys? Terrell Owens and
that close.
Yeah, talk about him for a second before, you know, he might show up here, so I don't want to blow him up. Yeah.
Yeah, he was, he was the first player I remember watching film on him before, right when I was going to New Britain. I was like, wow, this is another running back that comes every decade, you know, and it was tough, you know, and I would say it to him if he was here. It was a tough go. You know, he missed a lot of games his senior year, and a lot of it was just the coach before me just, you know, he could come and go as he pleased and do what he wanted and sit on his helmet. And
he did mention that, though. When he was here.
Yeah.
What you did for him and how you made him into a man.
Yeah, and I never gave up on him. You know, I kept him, you know, in the study halls, and it was funny.
He played defense?
Oh, no, he was just a running back. And when I finally brought him back, I said, okay, I put him with the defensive linemen as a punishment, really, and not the DNs, the linemen, and he was the best D lineman there. And then I made a deal with him. I said, I'm going to play at DN this week. You know, every sack, you can return a punt. Another sack, you return. And he returned 3 that game. And then he went back to running back.
He was telling a story when he was here, and he said he had hurt his quad or something, and you had told him, like, listen, just get in and squat. And he was like, Coach, I can't do it. I can't do it. And then you got him in there to squat, and he said, like, literally the injury went away.
I
and
remember
he, like,
that.
And he was swore by. He said he couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So he tells everybody now if they get hurt, just go lift weights.
A lot of those injuries, if you get right at it, you know, you can work it out. And he was once in a, you know.
Yeah, he said of his high school experience that Orlovsky was a pretty special high school quarterback.
Yeah, he was. Oof, yeah, he could have went. You know, you saw he was what 15 years NFL.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
one play.
Yeah, Justice. I mean, he took us on our back and took us right through the playoffs and won a championship. Without him, we wouldn't have done it. Yeah,
Coach, do you miss the adrenaline of game day? Now that you're removed from it for a little while, because I know we've all coached at different levels, and there's nothing like game day, the preparation. And
yeah, that's the one thing I miss the most, you know, just that, you know, once the first kickoff, it's just you're in a zone, you're in a different world, and you're just, you know, letting everything go and, you know, watching the kids just compete and be great. And that's the thing I miss.
Are you one of those guys too that just watches nonstop film when you were doing it? Or
yeah,
we had Mike Drew in here, and he's like, he was big into the film.
Yeah, I was a little, you know, over the top, too much with it. But you know, when I coached in college, so we would watch film. If we played on a Saturday, we'd start Saturday night. Sunday was, you know, 5 a.m. till 4 a.m. And you know, we slept on where we could find. And then, you know, same thing on Monday. The hardest part about high school is I was trying to do this in high school.
And by, work?
Well, by myself. So I didn't have another coach to say, you watch the defense. I had to do
both.
The offense, the defense, the special teams. So I was.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so I was doing special teams on Thursday in help class to catch up. As it was always. But
that's what our PE, you know, as a PE guy, that's what we do.
Yeah.
You
gotta just watching film on special teams on Thursday.
A little couple minutes, yeah.
Hey, Justin.
We got a guest here. Justice Harrison in the house.
Looking good.
Reunited with his high school coach.
Yeah.
Got his shades on inside. Looking nice. Fresh out of the gym.
Nah, I know it looked like it, but I wasn't.
Somebody.
Well, I was going to talk about some new
Just grab
stuff.
One of those there.
But,
You'll like that, yeah.
Justice, come on over here.
Hey, we were just telling the story about you getting the quad injury and coach making you squat it out.
Oh, yes, it worked.
Ace bandage and squat rack. Here we go. Yeah.
Yeah, you got it right. Oh, you guys were telling that story about the quad injury.
Yeah. Tell it again. Remembered it. Coach remembered it.
Yeah, just it was crazy because first of all, I was a little softer in high school, right?
Yeah.
So
luckily
coach, he, you know, and by that time of the year, I had no choice but to trust them, what they were telling me. So I get the quad right before, at the end of the West Haven game. We won. It was a big game. But I couldn't walk. Well, I thought I couldn't walk. You know, I'm much softer at this time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll never forget, Golden goes, you're going to get in that fucking squat rack. I said, what? I can't even bend my leg. You're getting that squat rack, and you're going to run after. I said, all right, coach. Squat. Boom. Squat. Go outside, run. And there were just striders. It was after a game. You know, the program was set. We would do conditioning during the week, every Tuesday, and we would work out on Sunday after the game. And lo and behold, it worked out fine. But fast forward 3-4 years later, same thing happened to me at the Hula Bowl in Hawaii. Nobody's there. I just remember what coach had me do. Now, this is in front of scouts and everything, so I got to perform, right? I was like, damn, I slept with my ace bandage on my leg. I woke up the next morning. I go to the local gym in the facility in the hotel, and I squat. And I get on the treadmill and I run. Stretch it out. Practice, we had practice that night, and I was able to go. But because of that, it helped me through.
Yeah.
That's cool, man.
That's great. That's a great story.
That West Haven game, they scored late, and we're down, I want to say, 4 or 5. Minute and a half to go, and we're on our side of the 50. We take a sack on first down. And this is Neil Johnson, was a great quarterback, played at Northeastern, but he was seeing 4 receivers. He got banged up pretty good that game. So he almost throws a pick on second. Another incomplete on third. Now it's 4th and 18. I'm like, we're not going to fucking catch a pass. And I said, Justice sprint draw. And they dropped 8. And he took it, 70 yards? Untouched against the
pre-. To the house?
To win the game. Yeah.
To the house?
And everyone's like, no.
It's funny.
And whatever we call it.
It's like, remember the tight?
Yeah. But here's the funny part about that. Neil comes into the huddle, and we're looking like, and he goes, sprint draw. We like, no, what? And then he's like, yeah. We all said it at once. Like, yeah, this is a good call. And, man, they like to say that that's the greatest run for, of my career.
Yeah, it was
but
crazy.
It was like the run that, you know.
So we had 3rd and 17?
Fourth.
We called 4th and 17?
4th and 17, I called, yeah. And then
you called a draw? But they might have drug tested you.
I got to give it to him.
Sprint draw.
Hey, you know what they say, though.
Was that in the playoffs?
In the playoff game.
Don't think of plays, think of players, right?
Yeah, we lost to Bristol Central that year. So we need a miracle. We need Southington to beat Bristol Central. And it happens. Washington missed a field goal from the 1 yard line. And then we needed two more things to happen. We had to beat Glastonbury something. So we sneak in. We shouldn't even be in the playoffs. We sneak in, and we ended up number one in the state. We beat Greenwich and West Haven back to back.
I don't know. Is this, man? I tell people I've had some, obviously, some good college and some short time in the league, some experience around some good football players, great coaches. But my high school experience is the one that I hold most near dear to my heart. More important than having my name called to the National Football League, the stuff that I went through in high school, which I thought would have broken me because of the experiences when I had to leave the team and he brought me back.
Yeah, he just covered that right before he walked in. He's like, it wasn't always easy.
It was, and this is the thing that people don't understand that about sports and leadership and having the right people around you. Dan Lewinson, my junior year, I thought I was making the right decision to walk away from the team because of some stuff that happened. I call myself not going to the game. Dan Lewinson says, "Are you an idiot?" Takes me in the car, drives me to Supple Field in Maloney at the time, and I go sit out the first half of that game, and then the second half at 15 carries, 216 yards, 3 touchdowns. I send that tape out to colleges, right? Cochran comes, he says, "No one's bigger than the program. I have been babied the last 3 years, not in any good kind of shape. We shouldn't have lost the game. I shouldn't have lost the game as a junior. But I was in such terrible shape and not knowing what I didn't know." And then Cochran comes, I'm getting like 12 to 15 carries a game, and I'm completely fresh because we conditioned like it mattered. Like he would condition us on a Tuesday like it was for the championship. And this is the difference, and people don't understand, like, I think he's the greatest coach in high school history here in Connecticut. I don't think it's even close, right? But I think you could put him up to some other coaches in the collegiate level, which I always wanted to ask him why he never went to college.
We just
like
he didn't give us a good answer. Ask him again.
It's profound to me because I've been around a bunch of coaches.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, this man is one of the best I've ever been around.
The biggest is I had a son, Casey, who, you know, I spent every day of my life with, picked him up every day from kinder care to after school, was at every practice, every game. When you're divorced, you can't move away. You know, it's just one of those things because she's not coming with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and you got a son, you got to be there. You just have to be there. You know, and that was the biggest part of it.
And that right there, to me, that answer as a father today, it makes perfect sense.
Sure.
I've had a bunch of opportunities through football, but I've dedicated the better part of a decade just to make sure I'm home every day. Like, when we get out of here, I'm going to go home. I'm going to play catch with my boys in the yard. Having Casey on a bus as a young kid after all our games, and to see him grow up and become the player he became, it all made sense, right? So you don't always have
You don't realize that when you're 16, 17. Yeah.
Well, it's a similar story of Coach Early. And he stayed around because his boys, he wanted to coach them in high school, into college, and then he had offers, and then it got too late, basically. You know, he kind of stayed where he was at. So
I think he could probably go somewhere else if he chose right now. The stock is pretty high, but I like the analogy.
But yeah, man, it's just a bunch of unbelievable time.
I
my leather jacket is still downstairs. My high school state championship, I can't find it. Probably gonna get a replica. It's like I said, it's one of my greatest joys. Hopefully, at some point, I'll get into the High School Hall of Fame. I think I should have been in already for New Bern High School, which they're voting on that. I'll be able to do that with my sons. My son just finished up at Southern High School. He's gonna hold probably. He's been around 12 track records. He led the state receivers, all-state receiver. You know what I'm saying? And it's not my biological son, but no one can tell us that, right? Because what it took for me to raise him is a lot of the stuff that I got from my football background, right? All the things that, like, just thinking that you're injured and you're really
so it
not.
must have been a culture shock when he showed up for you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But here's the thing. It's funny because It dawned on me that, to be honest, and I don't know if he'll agree, I feel like the team that we won the state championship wasn't even our best team in the last 3 years I was a part of. But it just goes to show you that coaching matters, right? We had, on my sophomore year team, we had a kid named, a guy named Chris Bellamy as a junior goes in to play UConn. John Ballard goes in to play South Carolina. Phil Parlapiano, I thought, was the better lineman of the five. We had Marcus Mitchell on that team. Eric Pierce goes over to play Tennessee. Willie Cruz goes to Yale. Leroy Knight goes to Holy Cross.
It's true.
We had a bunch of guys. I mean, everywhere. But we go 9-1, we lose. He actually commentated on that game when we go 9-1. They made the wrong call. I mean, we go 9-1 down in Southington. We lose one game in Southington by 1 point. And instead of going running it to tie the game, that would have sent us to the playoffs, the coaches decide to go. Unbelievable. He decides to throw a quick slant. We have myself, Chris Bellamy, and a guy named Steve Wysocki. Steve Wysocki goes on to play at UMass. We're all in the same backfield.
Wow.
Just give it to one of us. And it's only, you know, man, that ball gets tipped out of line of scrimmage, and here we are at 9-1. We don't make the playoffs. Circle 2 years later, Jack comes in. We end up getting a second berth at this opportunity to play for the state championship when we lost to Bristol Central, which I had a concussion, by the way. I don't know. That's the only reason we lose that game.
My coach protect the players.
No.
I played him on defense like an idiot.
I think I was telling him that story. Like, I came into the locker room that morning, the Thursday morning before the game, and you were on the desk sleeping. And I startled him. He woke up, and he just was looking at the paperwork that of notes of whatever, and he just started banging on the desk. He knew it was going to be a tough matchup, you know, but we ended up losing that game. But it's just funny because everything comes full circle. To Bucky Jones and that state championship team in 1992 lose to Bristol Central, they go on to win a state title. 10 years later, we have that opportunity. And for whatever reason, we lose to Southington. Bristol Central, it was close. Now, we go out to Southington, and we dismantle them. We had a guy named Brandon Johnson that was on that team for 3 years. He never saw the field. When I was out, credit to the coaching staff, Cochran's coaching staff, this kid comes in, and not only is he good, he's more than serviceable, so much so that it was chatter that he didn't need me. But this is what he does. Everybody's involved.
You're right? Accountable, yeah. Right? So, put him in there. He's supposed to perform.
But he wasn't just performing. He was excelling. I never technically beat Southington. Lost him. I was a freshman. It was the most embarrassing loss. I wasn't part of 65-0 guy on the front page of the newspaper with an ice pack on his head. I'm from Ohio, where football is big. Losing to me was never like a accepted thing. And I felt like at the time they accepted losing. So as a sophomore, we lose by 1 point. My junior year, they come to us, we lose to them by a couple points, maybe 4 points or whatever. My senior year, I'm suspended away from the team, but we beat them, and I mean we beat them handily. And I wasn't a part of that. It almost, I want to say one of the moments, and I just couldn't imagine. But I get to come back, and I should be the all-time leading single season leading rusher at Nebraska, but because of lack of guidance, never been pushed hard, being allowed to just do whatever, Cochran had to lay his foot down, and he made us a better team for it, right? And we ended up winning the state championship. So I want to say thank you, Coach, because without you, man, I don't think. In fact, I know. Like, if you just turn on the tape from my junior year, yeah, I'm the best player on the field. But I'm out of shape.
That's what he said. He said when he came in here, he was watching film. He's like, holy cow, like you get one of these guys every 10 years, but
I'm out of shape. You could just see it. It was ugly. Like, and I was tired after carry five. And with him, I was like, can I get more? But the game would be 60-0.
Didn't get to play a lot of second half.
So it was a.
That was awesome, man. That's an incredible thing for us because we're getting to know Coach. We go back with you a little bit now since you've been around Bristol. I hope young kids, and they won't listen to this because it's just like our couple hundred friends, but like that's crazy, man. Just suck it up and listen to the guy. And hopefully he's the right guy, and you were lucky enough to have a right guy. And we know a lot of coaches that we love, and we've seen some other ones. And, you know, once you get a good one, these districts should not chase them away. That's all I'm saying.
So do you have any aspirations of going back coaching?
Yeah,
back in
someday,
high school?
Someday. I like to.
So you said 2019 was.
How old are you, Coach?
Me, 58, just turned 58.
Yeah, I mean, you look way young enough to keep doing this.
No,
crap.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean.
You want to go back to high school?
Connecticut's tough. It'd be tough to coach in this state. Just
What about the Killingly thing? Like, what was that all about?
Honestly, that was a teaching job that became an assistant coaching job. That
are you the type of guy that can put it aside, not the ego, but just the fact that you know better? Are you the type of guy that can be an assistant after what you've accomplished as a head?
In the right situation, yeah. Maybe like state like Florida, something like that.
Yeah, he got to get out of here, man. I got two younger sons that are going to be, I'm pretty sure they're going to be very good football players when it's time, and we're not going to live here. We just can't.
We're at an all-time low now in Connecticut, but high school football, we're probably.
What if we move Justice to that street in Bloomfield?
Yeah. It's tough right now. We're just barely above Rhode Island. You know, we're at the rock bottom, and we're not producing players. We're just with the CIAC and the restrictions, we're just, it's impossible.
Coach, go ahead, man.
It just doesn't make any sense. They say they want to keep these kids safe, but in fact, it's the reverse. You got kids coming out that are not doing anything for predominantly the whole year if they're not playing another sport, and then they're going out there with equipment and not lifting, and the coach can't do this, and it doesn't make any sense. And it trickles down even to youth football, where you can't condition these kids, and then they get hurt or they become turned off to the sport because their first interaction was they got the football in August after not doing nothing. Yeah. So how do you teach a kid that's out of shape about an X's and O's? It doesn't make any sense. So my wife and I have already decided when my two younger sons get to high school or before they get to high school, we're going to move because we have to. And not just for football, for all the sports. The CIAC, I color commentate for the state of Connecticut, been doing it for a decade, and I see the games. Football is not good here. The players are not what you, and it ain't just about the size and the speed of it, it's they're not prepared. They're not prepared. They got 1,000 conferences. Everybody is a champion now.
So what is the, I don't mean to cut you, what is the rule now? When could they start practicing? I mean, obviously you could lift year-round, but when is the official start date, dude?
The biggest thing is the CIAC took away spring football, and that was the time, the biggest, it was bigger than camp, it was bigger than the championship. You know, 10 days to teach the game without stress, without, you know, worrying about game planning. You get those kids that just finished 5-6 months in the weight room, and now they're still scared. They're still fear, and they never put equipment on. You get them through 10 days of spring football, real gradual. And the state, the way they did it, I mean, it was during COVID, every year they tried to get rid of spring football. It would be 15 days, then 10, and then you can only wear pads a certain number. And then they came up with a ridiculous scam where you can do spring football or get 5 extra days, which they're just trying to get rid of spring football. And then during COVID, they had a vote. There was 3 coaches on a committee, and the vote was 8-7 to keep it. And then that night, Brockett from Ansonia, Delvecchia from St. Joe's, and Ferrazzi from Sheehan got kicked off the coaches committee. 2 days later, they vote again. It was all ADs and principals and the shit can spring football, and it hasn't been the same since. No, it's just
yet the basketball tournaments still cater to the football playoffs, or at least the Thanksgiving game, right?
Well, they added.
We used to start before the Monday of Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Well, they want to move. They want to get rid of the Thanksgiving games now.
That's the next thing.
And that would be how. I mean, I don't know.
Only region left in the country that has spring that does Thanksgiving
rivalry games.
You got Massachusetts, Connecticut. No, I think it's we're the only thing we have that no other state has is Thanksgiving.
Get out.
If you're in Florida, you're like, wow, that's cool. They're playing Thanksgiving. That's the one thing we got left. And it's the ADs don't want
to
work that day.
Because
they're lazy. They're all lazy. They're not. ADs, I don't know. You guys aren't an AD.
No.
But now they're coaches who couldn't coach either. They're not. They become ADs. And they because they couldn't coach.
Yeah, there's a guy.
AD's going to CIAC. Sorry to interrupt you,
true.
Justice.
No,
my old head coach is Lynn Cordo, right? Now, Leland's in the Hall of Fame. He's coached some good players, right? But if I'm an adult now, I have children of my own, I've coached, I've played. Lenny's a nice guy. He should have never. We should have a huge wall of state championships. Like the amount of talent that came through there when I was there, it is ridiculous. Like if you just looked at the names, we had a guy on a team named Eric Atkinson. Remember him? Eric Atkinson, his name, they called him Big Daddy Eric Atkinson. This kid had Auburn come sit in his stands. Completely out of shape. Completely out of shape. He never played to his ability. Like, knowing what I know now, it's just like, how? How does somebody sit back for so long and let a program that was so dominant go down the way it's gone now? Like, it's not personal, right? Just I'm seeing what I see, and I'm making an evaluation of it. Like, it's not fair to the kids.
It ain't the kids' fault either. Like, if somebody doesn't want to put that work in, can't have them. You know, just can't have them. And I don't care what the sport is. And football is obviously other sports we coach times 10 at least, right? But if you don't want to put the time in, if a kid says, I want an extra bucket of ground balls at short because I've been, you know, struggling a little bit, like, you have to hit them. Like, that you signed up for it. And then the coaches nowadays, they talk about how it comes out to 25 cents an hour and all this stuff. And it ain't about that. These stipends aren't big enough anyway, right? So, like, what do you do it for? For the players. And so the program can be built because you have the players. And, like, you were lucky, man.
Very lucky. I would, and very lucky, because at
where would you have ended up if you played your senior year at New Britain without coach?
Oh, I got it. this is crazy. It is like the craziest thing. I'm in high school for 4 years, and never once did my guidance counselor say, "Justice, this is what you need." This guy comes in the spring of my senior year, says, "Bring your transcript." I'm like, okay, coach. I've had multiple coaches coming to see me. I'm already the top player in the state in my senior year. Going into my senior year. Jack comes in and one day tells me, son, you're not eligible for college. Well, what do you mean? You're missing a math. Where's my guidance counselor? Right? Here I am.
Yeah. Where is your guidance counselor?
I'm the top player in his school, the largest boys' school in the state. And granted, I'm a father now. It wasn't on him. It should have been on my family. But my brother didn't know who was my guardian at the time. And he and I had issues. He was just a couple years older than me. He didn't know what he didn't know. But my guidance counselor, the guy that's looking at the paperwork, the guy that's putting the schedule together, never says, oh, this kid is missing a math. Or he's not eligible for college. I took two maths my senior. And when Jack said this to me, I almost laughed. He says, you're going to need four. He says, you're going to need all A's. I said, Coach, what do you mean? I've never gotten all A's. But it's just funny because
with the four A's, he only needed an 880 on the SAT.
And like that, he knew it. Where's Cordell? People, no, I know Cordell's everybody's friend, and he was a nice guy. I think that he used to have own a place at the beach, and I would go up there and eat. But it's what I'm looking at is the little boy that was there that didn't know any better.
Yeah.
And the coach that really... If winning, he didn't have to do that, right? Because we were going to win. With me on the field and him preparing me, we were going to win. But, hey, you're ineligible if you don't take this class. These classes. And so I take the classes, and I end up getting A's. And it took a lot of work, right? I had a lot of help from a lot of people. But without that conversation, it's, yeah, state championship. Justice, where are you signing? Nowhere. I'm ineligible. You see what I'm saying?
Junior college.
Disgusting. It's disgusting.
BDRB won at Tungus.
I have a comment about high school football in Connecticut. So question I have is early sports play by kids in specialization, baseball, soccer, lacrosse, hockey, taking kids, because you can't start playing football relatively till about, you know, middle school, a little before that. Year-round. You can't do it all year-round anyways. But these kids are playing football. I mean, they're playing basketball, baseball, soccer. So, you know, that kid who was a soccer player who came to play football for you, parents who already put $10,000 or more into their training is not letting him go play football, quit the last game of the year.
Yeah, football is one of the few sports, if you're not a quarterback.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you're a quarterback, you need to have a certain skill set. But honestly, most quarterbacks get screwed up in youth football, and they get mechanic issues you can never fix because it just takes too many. But you can make a football player if they're an athlete and they got a little they're a little cuckoo in the head because you got to be to play football, you know, to hit people at those speeds. But you can make football players, you know. And like I said, a lot of my best players came off the soccer team, you know. And
basketball, Pinnick at the basketball.
Pinnick Freeney was a great baseball player. That was his sport.
But those are kids willing to come off those sports now.
Mike McLeod, who's got the Ivy League record still, running back after Justice, he was on the soccer team in New Britain, you know. And
this is what I try, and this is a conversation around a football in New Britain, who's the best running back of all time. Now, Mike McLeod is in that conversation because of Jack.
We got Mike.
It's funny because I know I'm a better running back than Mike, but the numbers suggest like that Mike. He's just as good, right? But without Jack, he doesn't even get a sniff. Like, no joke. Like, the kid was a 500-pound squat out of high school, right? He was only 190 pounds.
Yale wasn't going to. So Yale can only take one kid at the lowest band, and that's got to be a quarterback, sometimes a running back. And Yale was going to use that spot on a quarterback. So Mike was out, and I talked to coach into coming to the game. We were playing Manchester, so I waited right before kickoff, and I said, Mike, you see the Yale coach? I said, he's not going to take you. You got one shot to prove it. I think Mike had 450 yards.
Come on, man.
Yeah. It's one of those dreams. And then they gave Mike the spot.
I mean, the kid was like, they did a piece on
this guy.
It was, but this is who he was, though. Like, one time, I think I told the story last time we were here.
Got in the yell, though, huh?
Right before the game. Didn't even say anything to us.
He dated Denzel's daughter, too. That was the best
one. This guy's got life. Just because he's sitting in front of me.
Out of Mount Vernon.
Wow. Jack comes to the locker room, doesn't say anything to anybody. We're waiting for his words. He don't say anything. He just looks at us, grabs one of the guys by the helmet, boom! Blood screaming down his face and runs out of the locker room. We all look around and run out after him.
That's crazy, man.
I like that Yale story. That's fantastic.
It's a true story, yeah. Mike, if he didn't get hurt that year, he would have got drafted.
Coach, speaking of producing players, I want to give you the opportunity to talk about what you're producing these days. Brought some nice refreshments here tonight. Can we talk a little bit about your business venture? Because, you know, I think I told you this. I saw Chris Dunn on NBA Network years ago. And who's he go to visit? You at your restaurant. Guys in the NBA. And you've gone from the restaurant business to producing some other goodies for people.
Honestly, it's I tried retiring a few times. It's just something comes up and get dragged back into it. But I was at Jordan Reed's birthday party in Virginia, and I ended up making it a short vacation, and he took me into Maryland. He owned two dispensaries, and he was partnering with a friend that had four, and they were buying a grow site, and I worked my way somehow into the deal to do the delivery and transportation for them. And so I went back to Connecticut. I took me about 4 months. I wrote all the applications for the delivery and transport, and right as we were submitting, those two broke up, fell through. Came back a month later, Connecticut legalized cannabis, and just by miracle, I qualified for a license based on the street I grew up on in New London. So I end up getting a license for delivery, and it's just something I thought that, you know, would take 3 years. We did in 6 months, and we're covering most of the state now, and 20 drivers, and 9 stores, and now I'm looking to get the hell out of it.
What's like enjoy the, what's life again? What's the security again? Like with something like that? Or is it,
you know, it's
not quite like an armored car?
We're B2C, so we don't transport from the grow site to the store. That's the big 2 drivers, Brinks truck type thing.
Yeah,
we just, you could order right now from Trulieve. We'd pick it up, bring it here to the house, and we'd be in and out in 2 minutes. Normal car. It's just lockbox and a GPS, and it's been safe. We're over 40,000 deliveries since July, and
get out.
We haven't had an issue yet.
You ever have to go to Justice's house?
Hey, are you coming to this part of the state or no?
Oh yeah, we're doing our biggest. Actually, New Britain has the highest,
of course,
cannabis use rate in the country per capita, which is
in the country.
You can Google it right now. You'll in the country.
You need more drivers?
We could use one more, yeah, because we're going to start.
Not for me.
We're going to start delivering for Fine Fettle when they open in Bristol on June 15th. So.
Wow. That's, well, I was totally against the use of cannabis as a young man, and since my older years and maybe the head stuff, I haven't slept well. So I'm in Atlantic City last year with some teammates from Rutgers, and one of my guys said, "Hey, you should try this gummy. It'll help you sleep." And I'm like, "Nah, man, I don't do that." He said, "Trust me, it'll help you sleep." I slept like a baby.
That's what that's gonna do.
So I need some of this to take and home with my wife.
Your wife's gonna like that tonight too.
I know, that's smart man.
It'd be another boy running, no, another running back.
We're done. We're done with having kids. But if I can guarantee a boy, if I could have got her to have another, I would have. People know you do a bunch of stuff in your life, and I've had some great experiences. I'll never forget. He had Andrew Pennock come talk to me. I was a knucklehead from the beginning. Then I had opportunity to when I was in Indy to play with Dwight Freeney, and those connections, you know, help you along the way. But being a dad is easily the best thing you'll ever do. And to hear him say he sacrificed, you know, some other potential opportunities because he wanted to be with his son, it means everything to me. It means everything. And, I thank Coach because a lot of stuff, man, he didn't have to do. And he did it. Like, the memories. Like, I'm going to get with a former, a bunch of teammates of mine on from high school, right, next week. We're gonna. His daughter's gonna graduate from college or whatever, and he tells us in the group chat, "Yeah, my daughter's graduating, but we're all gonna get together." Like, but it doesn't happen without those things from high school, you know. And I have the group chats with the guys in the league and guys that I play with in college or whatever. But my high school guys, we all got kids now, and it's the best.
Hey, I say this to kids all the time. Like, if you're still calling your high school coach,
oh yeah,
he did something right, and you're in here saying, Coach to this, coach to that.
You know? Called him Jack and Cochran, so I'm not sure. Coach did a good job. I call him Coach for freak's sake.
Yeah. Definitely Coach.
Thank you.
I would like, it's funny because a couple years back they had an issue at New Bern High School where they were looking for another coach. Do you know we were like trying to get a petition signed to get this guy back? And if my son that went to Southington, because we quote unquote moved there,
ag program.
You know, if Jack would end up in New Britain, my son would have been playing for him because that's how what I know has already been done. And if he could coach me, who was a
that's right.
complete knucklehead, like I, coach decided to, after he suspended me, had me come back to the team. And well, he wanted me to ask the seniors, other seniors there, you know, what should I be to come back to the team and tell them why. So I go into the weight room and I'm talking to the guys. "Hey guys, I've been here for 4 years, been on varsity. I think I want to see this thing through. My apologies for how I acted. I want to come back to the team." They're like, "No."
They're like, no,
we don't need you. Brandon Johnson, a kid that couldn't get on the field with the other coaching staff. They looking like, "We just beat Southington. We haven't beaten Southington since we've been here. We don't need Justice." And I'm like, "What? Y'all don't need me? Y'all just got the varsity." But coach me, you know what I mean? That whole, it was bananas, man. Like, the stories we still talk about. I'm still in contact with Neil. He owes me a touchdown because Jack calls a... it was a dive. We only had 3 run plays, by the way.
He said that. He covered it.
Three. Think about that. 3 freaking run plays. And I had like, I don't even know how many yards I had that year. But Neil calls a quarterback sneak for a touchdown in the state championship game. But that's how Neil was. Neil wasn't the most talented.
That's right.
But he's an unbelievable leader, right? He just, that's just who he was. Very unathletic. Can't do much, but he'll lead you through
a brick wall. Full ride in Northeastern.
Mm-hmm. But... just
and he was a backup safety the year before.
Didn't even crazy. Y'all have no idea how bad it was prior to Jack getting there, coach getting there. It's like it's laughable to know that we were that good. And then my senior year, we weren't very good.
There was a receiver, Alfred Keyles, and he's probably the best receiver I ever coached. Almost made the Steelers.
That's a bold. Say that again, coach.
He was probably the best receiver I ever coached, and he was a second string corner the year before, and then he had the best hands I've ever seen.
Wow. I mean, these are kids that could not get on the field.
He almost made the Steelers.
Yeah, he still got all the records. Was it Kutztown?
Kutztown.
All the records there.
Coach, this has been crazy, man. What a good night. Justice popping in. Quick, we're going to ask you just a couple questions to wrap it up.
I know you got a drive ahead of you. Little word association game. We touched on some of these guys, but when I say I'm talking Connecticut football, I know we're beating it up. But when I say Tabucky Jones, what do you think of? Doesn't have to be one word. Just what are you thinking?
Well, first one word, freak, and it was my first high school coaching. He was my first high school coaching game was against Tabucky, 1992 in Bloomfield. He comes in, I'm like, oh, he lives bigger than all the linemen. And we played him tough. That was but he was, oof.
How about Bristol's Timmy Washington?
Tough, just nails. We hit him 300 times that night, and we couldn't put him down. Just tough.
Victor Rosa.
Big play.
Big you got play. A chance?
I think so.
Combine type of chance.
If he can catch the ball and block on third down, and they'll give him a shot.
Ansonia.
Tradition. You know, just tradition. That's we modeled, you know, after them, you know, that year in and year out.
Chris Dunn.
Oh, God. Let's see. Perseverance. Chris came from if you know the story, he came from hell and made his way to, you know, he's going to have maybe 15-year in an NBA career.
That's awesome. Pinnick.
Work ethic. I mean, he roly-poly, heavy, ended up being the best runner. But he held the rushing record for years and was the size of a lineman. You know?
Justice Harrison.
Winner. You know, he was different when the game started. You know, I'm just trying to think. Four games, he rushed for over 1,200 yards. Won the playoff game.
He'll tell you about it, too. That's great, though.
Hey, listen, I didn't know how to practice until he got there. He actually taught me how to practice.
Jay, what do you got?
Thing we call who would you rather,
right? Yeah,
we're gonna run through NFL guys, so you gotta pick.
Sure.
Got it. Alright, Peyton Manning, Dan Marino.
Peyton Manning by far.
I like it. Quick. Darryl Green, Darrell Revis.
Revis all day.
Alright, Calvin Johnson, Randy Moss.
Can't go against Moss.
No,
can't do it.
Alright, so we're gonna go old school here. Lester Hayes, Charles Woodson.
Lester Hayes, was he 6'4"? And
put the stick
on? Put that stick on you, but he was, and he hit.
All right, so Dan Marino, Aaron Rodgers.
I hate Aaron Rodgers. Dan Me Marino.
Too. Was there a reason you hate Aaron Rodgers?
He blames everybody but himself.
I like it, all right. Derek Thomas, the great, late, great Derek Thomas, Julius Peppers.
Thomas. Peppers was soft.
I was going to say Thomas.
Ooh, Peppers
I was gonna
soft?
Say Tom, soft. Thomas and LT are a legit question.
Thomas tough. Yeah, Peppers was always hurt.
All right.
Hey, he said it. I believe him. He said he's soft.
All right. All right. Eric Dickerson, LaDainian Tomlinson.
Ooh, that's a tough one. SMU. I got to say Tomlinson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of the catching, the receiving, or just...
I got to see him play a lot when Andrew was with the Chargers, and he was just a different dude.
All right. John Riggins, Derrick Henry.
Riggins all day.
Really?
All day.
All right. This one will bother me if you don't pick my guy here. Reggie White, Aaron Donald.
Reggie White.
Attaboy.
By far.
Boy,
you're an Eagle fan.
Watch some film and watch what he did to tackles with a forearm, and he spent half his time in church.
Yeah,
you know,
all right. Like justice.
Yeah, Jack Lambert, Ray Lewis.
This is more personal. I'm a huge Steelers fan growing up, and Jack Lambert was my guy. But nothing compares to Ray Lewis. He's the best linebacker in the history of the world. Never,
wow.
Nobody will ever be better than him.
All right, Mike Singletary, Fred Warner.
Michael Singletary all day.
All right. We've had this discussion here. Coaches now, Andy Reid, Bill Belichick.
You can't compare him. Belichick, best defensive coach ever. Reid, probably the best offensive coach ever. Wow. Ever.
Who'd you take?
In today's game, you got to go with offense. But
come on, man.
But Belichick, I mean, he's one who beat he beat the Bills that year as coordinator of the Giants.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have been on the field. Nobody stopped the Bills that year. They were averaging, what, 40-some points a game?
And the Rams, greatest show on turf.
So we got three.
Who are you taking on that one, just so for the record?
As a head, you got to go with Belichick.
Okay, thank you.
Doesn't compare.
That's all we wanted to hear.
All right. So
Reed's a good OC.
three college guys. Tim Tebow, Tommy Frazier.
Frazier, by far. I watched Jordan Reed as a freshman in one of those fighting drills at Florida.
Yeah.
Picked Tebow up and slammed him on his head.
Wow. Tebow's a big boy now.
Yeah, he's soft.
So this wasn't Tommy Frazier, but obviously you remember the Miami Hurricane Nebraska game where Osborne went for two.
Yeah.
So you were, I always wondered this. They were known for the option. Why didn't they run the option for the two-pointer?
Because they outthink it. And
he rolled out and he threw a pass behind the guy and the guy deflected.
They outthink themselves.
If you that remember, call, I remember watching this on 4th-and-7. They did adjust this. They said 4th-and-7, the season, the championship, they ran the option and they got a first down on it. Yeah. And they went down and scored and then they went for two and they threw a pass.
That play has to be decided on Wednesday. Not the day of the game. You can't.
Emotion can't be part of it.
In the emotion. You got to practice that play, and this is what we're running.
All right, I like it. So, speaking of Nebraska, Mike Rozier, Eddie George in college.
Oh, Eddie George.
Yeah.
All right. Rozier had the best line in the country. You know,
he did.
Doug DeBose ran after him. And...
All right. There's one guy I loved in college too: Percy Harvin, Desmond Howard.
Percy.
Harvin could fly.
Harvin, I got to see on those Florida teams. Yeah. He was 4'2", 4'3", but he was soft. Always had migraines and headaches. I got to go the other way. He never played. He missed five games a year.
Yeah, he did. He played in the NFL for quite a while, too.
It's like Britain.
Last one, and it's a movie. Remember the Titans, which I think is overrated. Well, these guys love it. Or The Program.
The Program.
The Program.
Come on, yes, man.
Just the hit and loan.
Running the beers, man.
Remember the Titans is a better actual movie, but they hit in The Program.
The Program, if y'all remember that scene when he's in the room, I want to try to replay it and do like a meme, like a reel. He's like, hit everybody. That's like the best scene.
That's something in the linebacker.
Yeah, he's like asking him, he's going through the film, and in my mind, I'm like, this is for real.
Coach, a real football coach, did you hate Rudy?
It was terrible. It's a terrible movie, isn't it? Thank you. I love it.
I mean, good story, but.
Last thing here. We're going to let you go. Thank you so much for coming. This was cool, man. We like getting high school coaches in here, but to get the best is cool. Are you in the Connecticut Football Hall of Fame? Is there such a thing?
No, I'm not.
You're not in the Coaches Association?
No Hall of Fame.
Okay, so you're going to be in one at some point. We're going to make sure of it. What hat you wearing in there? Or visor or whatever.
You don't wear a visor, do you?
No.
It doesn't strike me as a crude.
Good.
No.
He still got his hair. Of course he ain't wearing
no. Yeah, honestly, I would...
What pullover?
I would do what the mothers do with two kids. I would create a New London, New Britain, Bloomfield hat all in one.
Can't do it. We're not going to accept it.
All right. Honestly, then, I would have to say Bloomfield.
That's where I started.
I was there 9 years, you know.
That's like Boggs going in as a Devil Ray and a Yankee and a Red Sox. What's he got to go in as? Red Sox, and he didn't. That's terrible. All right, so we're getting you a Bloomfield hat for your statue. I don't know what Hall of Fame it's going to be, but we're going to make sure you're in one. Coaches Association, without a doubt.
It's a question.
How many total players in the NFL just on the way out?
7.
And you had 5 on that Bloomfield team?
5 Bloomfield, Justice 6, and...
Reed.
Are we not counting the Reed brothers?
The 2 Reed brothers, so it was 8. I'm sorry, it was 8. 4.
Not too shabby.
I'll tell you what, though. Connecticut's got to step up, though. I mean, come on, man.
It's interesting to hear what Coach had to say about that, yeah.
Making you lift after you get hurt? I mean, come on. We got to get more players in the NFL. Connecticut.
Let's do it.
Come on,
preventative, Connecticut. It worked. Trust me.
Justice.
In Texas or Florida, I'd be the highest paid person in that town.
Yeah, without a doubt. Make bank.
It's true.
Open up a dispensary of your own.
A long time ago, I had an interview in Dallas.
Dallas what?
Permian?
It was a new, no.
Every read that book?
It was, it was a magnet school opening in 97, I think it was.
$3 million stadium.
If you were going to come back under the ideal circumstance, you definitely were going to coach, would you go with the magnet school or like a city school? What would be the type? Not necessarily the school. What would be the type of school? Like?
It'd be same thing, city school all day.
Any reason? Just amount of kids or?
Yes, where you make the most difference. You know, you get kids who's normally are the first person to go to college in their family, need the most help, not academically. The way the Connecticut, as you guys know, we got the richest town in the country, Greenwich.
Yep.
And
Steve Young.
10 miles away, we got the poorest one in the country, Bridgeport. And that's the way football has always been in Connecticut. The Darians and the New Canaans, they take private jets and they go play in California, and you got to fight, you know, for every inch you get at the city schools because there's no money, no budget, no camps, no. It's everything you do on your own, and it just takes that much more work. But it's where you get the most gratification too, where you can. Like in Justice's situation, multiply that by 500. That's how many kids get through their senior year and aren't qualified academically because, you know, when I went to New London, they didn't have a Prop 48 form. They didn't know what the clearinghouse was.
Yeah.
And think about that, how many kids.
That's pretty bad, actually.
And if your chance of going to a junior college and lasting 2 years and going to college is very low. It's a miserable experience for kids at any age to go to a junior college, you know, and that's why we spend so much time with study halls and, you know, tracking students and
just like y'all can never understand it unless you walk through, like see it in progress. Like we tried when he left, Tabucky Jones was the coach for a short time, and we tried to implement some of those things. And then it's just like funny remembering how he did it versus what they were trying to mimic, and it was awful. So it's like as much as guys think they can mimic, and we've seen a lot of guys come through that think they can mimic what you've done, and it's just like it's funny now. Like I like to think that I can do
so
it.
Coach here in practice, how was he? Was he a screamer? Was he one of those? Or just
oh yeah, he's gonna yell at you. But this is the thing too, like you gotta know. It was different, man. I wish there was a video camera. Maybe he probably would have gotten in trouble, but like it mattered. Practice mattered. When Corey was there for 3 years, like I'd be like walking on the field, like guys were like coming late. When coach got there, we were two hands all the way down to the practice field. Everything was structured. Practices were like,
when I literally got
to the game and it was easy. Like, you got to, I wish I could get the film
we
for
had
you guys.
To, yeah, we had to walk like a mile and a half under a tunnel and through the woods. Yeah. And that was the hardest part I felt was just getting them to the field. And then at night, I had to walk back. And one time I ended up in Kensington. And that was the tough part. And then band was number one when I was at New Britain. It wasn't football. So we couldn't use the game field. I mean, we had to go to, we were in another town, our practice field. We were in Kensington. And that's just the way.
Did you practice at Willowbrook?
No, never. Like I said,
where'd you practice?
In Kensington, called
Hungerford.
It was a park in Berlin. Yeah.
I'm trying to picture the school, and then
they still practice there.
You know the tunnel behind the stadium, baseball stadium.
Yeah,
there's a tunnel. That what's that highway called?
It's a 72 extension or something.
Yeah, we had to go under this tunnel, and it flooded, so you had to run up this thing. And I mean, the problem was that I learned the problems the year before. They used to leave practice and go to McDonald's and come back, and the coaches didn't even know. Or they'd lose half the kids in the woods, you know. And
it's just fun to hear this stuff.
Why wouldn't they practice at the stadium?
It just was used for games. It was better than a college stadium.
It's beautiful still.
But they took care of it. You couldn't walk on it. It was only used for games. And the band.
Oh, yeah, we got to get them out there for the trombone. But, like, I heard that, like, Cass and CIEC are taking a hard look at venues for state championships again. And, like, if they mess with Mohegan, that's kind of silly because they make money off it. But they only really make money from basketball. And football would probably be a close second.
Like, well, they do it. They do it all wrong. I mean, you can't make 2 years in a row. They made kids get up at 5 a.m. to play a state game at 9:30 a.m, which is
a football game at 9:30
because they're too cheap to book the stadium for 2 days. It was always Friday night, Saturday. Now they just did. Same as Mohegan. You had a team play a state championship at 8 a.m. in basketball. You know, because they're too cheap to book Mohegan for 2 days. It's just, it's asinine. Even get there. But
my point was, that stadium, beautiful. Why don't you just play them there? Pay the city of New Britain $1,000 for the day and call it. I mean,
no, it was good because when you got on that field, it was something special.
Yeah, I get that, the venue, but like,
and it was like turf, but it was grass.
It was grass. I was just gonna say you couldn't.
That's grass.
Yeah. That's grass. Now it's not.
No, it's not.
At the wrench, or where are we now?
No, we're in Beehive.
Yeah, it was
veterans.
Grass. Nobody. I didn't play a single football game on turf. Didn't exist.
No,
not this area.
We thought you did with the CTE with the ham. Yeah, you know. No. Studio engineer Kevin Ross, Lottie. Justice, thanks for stopping. Angry Jay wasn't angry tonight. He loves when intense coaches are in the house because that's what he is. Jack, Coach Cochran, this was fun.
Yeah, had a lot of fun. Thank you for having
me. We want you to come back.
Anytime.
We need it. The state needs it.
We're coming to see you. We want to check.
You got to come see it.
Oh, that's also true, yeah.
Come see it.
Everybody, that'll wrap it up on May 7th. Jack Cochran in the house, boys.
Thank you.